Cincinnati is one of the few cities in the nation lucky enough to have a true urban zoo. And when visiting this oasis, it's easy to forget you're still in the city. That's due in part to people like Rob Halpern. He's a zoo horticulture designer and has worked with the Cincinnati Zoo and the Bronx Zoo in New York City. Thane Maynard caught up with him recently.
Well, Rob, it is great to talk to you again.
And it's nice to speak to you again, Thane.
I'll tell you, we had quite a run. It was a while back, but when you were at Cincinnati Zoo in our horticulture department, we certainly had some fun.
We did. I think, you know, your passion for conservation, education, and wildlife and being a little silly and mine kind of meshed quite nicely.
Absolutely. In fact, one of my favorite memories of you is we hadn't seen each other for a while. We were at a zoo meeting, I don't know, call it 5 years ago, and you walked up and you looked at me and my little hair, and I looked at you and maybe less hair, and you said, "Man, we got old quick."
Maybe it has to do with, you know, my leaving Cincinnati. It just, time gets messed up.
Well, I think you're right. In New York City, they probably wore you out. But tell me a bit about your company, Zoo Horticulture Consulting and Design.
Well, in a way, I have to start with my years as the horticulturist at the Cincinnati Zoo, where our focus was on getting the public to fall in love with nature and creating a fantastic place for people to be with animals. And early on, there was a day when I was giving a tour of the grounds, and I was supposed to be talking about Chinese plants.
Mm-hmm.
And I was by the red pandas, where there was that great collection of assorted plants from China, helping people see where red pandas come from. And I was trying to talk about Chinese viburnums or something. And everybody on the tour was staring over my shoulder because the red pandas were behind me up in a tree. And they were trying to listen to me, but the pandas were a lot more interesting. And at that moment, I realized that I was going to have to talk about the pandas first and then talk about what the pandas' relationships are to plants in order to bring everybody around to the plants.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something like 20-some-odd years ago, and that's what I've been doing ever since, which is working with zoos to help design exhibits that let people who've come to see grizzly bears get excited about the plants that the grizzly bears depend on, and to understand entire ecosystems rather than just a neat bear.
Exactly, and your impact is still felt at our zoo because there's an interesting longevity to many of the plantings, particularly, you know, if we plant a big exhibit. I think of during the years you were with us, we had a lot of big changes that our gardens went through. We, during that time, officially became an accredited botanical garden. In fact, you'd be glad to know we just went through and, again, received our accreditation. So that's an important but arduous task. And this idea of having a great display garden in the middle of a city, which ours is very urban, and also when you were at the Bronx Zoo, I mean, the Bronx Zoo is obviously pretty urban, too. The garden is significant to the whole experience in some ways just as much as the animals.
And in Cincinnati, especially so, I felt, because there aren't a lot of big public gardens around. Spring Grove Cemetery is fantastic, and there are some other wonderful places. But that the zoo, which is such a center for public life, became so beautiful with plants and allowed everybody to sort of talk about plants and animals and nature and where it all comes from and how it's all connected. And that's the passion that moves us both to do what we do all day.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. Our zoo is in the smallest town of any of the top 10 zoos in America and probably on the smallest piece of land. And yet when people come from other zoos, we recently had Dr. Stuart Strahl, who's the head of Brookfield Zoo, he brought down the chairman of his board, and the first thing he says to his chairman is, "When we walk through this zoo, I want you to see how beautiful it is." And boy, that's an important thing to us because we don't have 600 acres like, say, the zoo in North Carolina or the zoo in Toronto. You know, we're on 67 acres, and having those gardens really be lush is vital to us.
Well, it's amazing to me that the zoo was basically laid out around 1875, and using that terrain made to appear to be a much bigger experience. Not everybody's going to like going up and down the hills, but it feels so much bigger. And back in about 1970s when zoo horticulture got serious, and the director then got serious about planting the place up, the zoo became even more interesting. And there's probably more packed in to every 50 feet there than there is in acres of the Brookfield Zoo.
Well, you know, an interesting thing, and the next time you're out this way, I think you'd get a kick out of it. We're slowly moving all of our parking off grounds where we bought 14 acres across Vine Street. And as a result, we're able to fill in those lots with exhibits. And some of those you're familiar with were done about the time you were with us, and some have been done since. But right now we're about to complete that process over the next couple of years and get rid of the main parking lot. We'll completely shift our entrance gate to the other side of the zoo. But that's a big opportunity to do just what you're talking about, which is not just put up some rock work and put some animals in the middle, but to say, okay, how do we both soften this and green this, but also how do we create this illusion that these animals aren't just in an urban zoo?
Yeah, and it's important, I think, for visitors to understand and for the rest of all of us to understand that animals are not simply decorative items. We live in a natural world. We depend on it, and also with a little luck, we get great joy from it. And the animals and plants and insects and water and rocks are so intimately related. And that's really the story, the total story that I'm most interested in telling with my work.
Well, and it's also, I know sometimes you're known as Zoo Plant Man, and I know your website is zooplantman.com. Did that just grow out of the fact that there naturally are lots of botanical gardens and horticulture societies, but the American Society of Zoo Horticulturalists is relatively new, isn't it?
Well, the AZH was created in 1980 because the notion of the importance of landscaping at zoos was something that I think the horticulturists got interested in before their bosses at the zoos did.
Mm-hmm.
The public has responded wonderfully all over the country. You know, you thinking specifically of the Cincinnati Zoo, back in 92 or so when we began the Spring Floral Festival, which served so many purposes. Of course, it got people to come to the zoo perhaps a little earlier in the spring than they might have otherwise planned to, because there were a million or two flowering daffodils and tulips and everything. It also became just this, you know, beautiful place to be on a spring day.
Mm-hmm.
So that a zoo could be a garden, you know, I think was really proven with the Spring Floral Festival there, and other zoos around the country have learned that lesson.
Well, at our zoo, as visitors who might be listening know, they can think of lush exhibits that we have that you played a role in. You know, many of the green plantings, like you'd said, for instance, around the red pandas, and as we were building toward Jungle Trails, which is our big lush forest. But when I think of you, I think probably the exhibit you're best known for, and maybe the reason they brought you to the Bronx, was to build their award-winning, and I would say the very best, gorilla exhibit anywhere in the world, which is called Congo Gorilla Forest. That had to be quite a challenge to transform the Bronx, New York, into the Congo Forest.
Yeah, that certainly was a wonderful opportunity. It is perhaps the largest gorilla exhibit there is, and the greatest compliment I've gotten in my career was at the opening event. We had the ambassador from the Central African Republic as part of one of the speakers, and as he was walking through the path of the forest towards the gorillas, he turned to the chairman of the board of the Wildlife Conservation Society and said, "I know where I am." And the chairman of the board looked at him thinking, "Well, I should certainly hope so." And the ambassador went on and said, "This is where I grew up."
Hmm.
And he felt that it looked like where he grew up, and here he was in the Bronx, New York. And that's what we're trying to do.
Well, and the great thing about that is 8 or 10 years later, having just been to the Bronx Zoo recently, it's even lusher. So that's a great thing about the work you do, is if you do it right, it continues to even become more immersive.
With the help of a great horticulture staff maintaining it, and certainly one of the terrific things about the ongoing gardening of the Cincinnati Zoo is that the horticulture staff that's there today is extremely talented, and of course I know many of them, and many of them were there when I was there. We've all worked together, so there's a continuity in horticulture exhibit knowledge at the Cincinnati Zoo that really extends about 35 years at this point with all of us who overlapped and worked with each other.
Well, listen, next time you're this way, please come down. I look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, I would look forward to it, Thane. It's been great talking to you.
My guest has been Rob Halpern, the founder and president of Zoo Horticulture Consulting and Design. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.